जयो राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, यशोदा नंदन भ्रज जन रंजन, यशोदा नंदन भ्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, Hare Krishna. So welcome to today's morning Bhagavatam class. We are going to continue our discussions from Canto 5, Chapter 14, entitled The Forest of Enjoyment. We are going to discuss text number 25 and 26 today. So I'll read the verse and we can repeat the translation together. Kvachicca Shita Vata Adi Anekadhi Daivika भौतिकात्मानिक दशनानां प्रतिनिवर्तन्ते कल्पो ध्रुमन्त चिन्तया विशिन्न आसते. क्वचित् समटाइम्स् च आल्सो शीतवात आदि सच एज कोल्ड एंड स्ट्रांग विंड्स अनेक वेरियस आदिदैविक क्रिएटेड बाय द डेमिगॉड्स भौतिक आदिभौतिक क्रिएटेड बाय अदर लिविंग एनिटीज आत्मीयानाम आध्यात्मिक क्रिएटेड बाय द बॉडी एंड माइंड दशानाम ऑफ कंडीशंस ऑफ मिजरी प्रति निवारणे इन द काउंटर एक्टिंग अकल्पः अनेबल दुरंत वेरी सीवियर चिंतया बाय एंग्जाइटीज विषन्न मोरोस आस्ते ही रिमेन्स. ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पट बाय डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद. लेट्स रिपीट द ट्रांसलेशन. Being unable to protect himself from the threefold miseries of material existence, the conditioned soul becomes very morose and lives a life of lamentation. These threefold miseries are miseries suffered by mental calamity at the hands of the demigods, such as freezing wind and scorching heat, miseries offered by other living entities, and miseries arising from the mind and body themselves. Purport. The so-called happy materialistic life, materialistic person, is constantly having to endure the threefold miseries of life called Adidevika, Adhyatmika and Adhibhautika. Actually, no one can counteract these threefold miseries. All three may assail one at one time, or one misery may be absent and the other present. Thus, the living entity is full of anxiety, fearing misery from one side or the other. The conditioned soul must be disturbed by at least one of these three miseries. There is no escape. So we all have practical realization of this, right? So let's see the next verse also. Kvachin mitho vyavaharan yat kinchit dhanam anyebhyo va kakinaka matram api apaharan yat kinchin va vidvesham eti vita sthatyat. As far as transactions with money are concerned, if one person cheats another by a farthing or less, they become enemies. Purport. This is called samsara davanala. Even in ordinary transactions between two people, there is invariably cheating because the conditioned soul is defective in four ways. He is illusioned. He commits mistakes. His knowledge is imperfect and he has a propensity to cheat. Unless one is liberated from material conditioning, these four defects must be there. Consequently, every man has a cheating propensity, which is employed in business or money transactions. Although two friends may be living peacefully together, due to their propensity to cheat, they become enemies when there is a transaction between them. A philosopher accuses an economist of being a cheater, and an economist may accuse a philosopher of being a cheater when he comes in contact with money. In any case, this is the condition of material life. One may profess a high philosophy, but when one is in need of money, he becomes a cheater. In this material world, so-called scientists, philosophers and economists are nothing but cheaters in one way or another. The scientists are cheaters because they present so many bogus things in the name of science. They propose going to the moon, but actually they end up cheating the entire public of large sums of money for their experiments. They cannot do anything useful. Unless one can find a person transcendental to the four basic defects, one should not accept advice and become a victim of material condition. The best process is to take the advice and instructions of Sri Krishna or his bona fide representative. In this way, one can be happy in this life and the next. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashchatya Deshattarine Vanchakalpa Tarurbhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So we are continuing this very insightful chapter, a very deep chapter and sometimes often misunderstood chapter, because in this whole section, in the previous and in this chapter, there's a beautiful allegory going on, comparing this material world to be like this big forest, this forest of enjoyment, right? And if you actually trace back the events that led to this chapter, suddenly, I mean, we know the story, Jadabharat and Raghugan were having this very deep philosophical discussion about this entanglement of matter and spirit. The example, the another analogy that is quoted earlier was Raghugana asked this question that how when there is rice in milk, when you cook the milk, the rice also gets affected. So likewise, anything that is happening in this world, the soul which is in this body, the soul should also get affected. But then that is the misunderstanding that he had. He thought that, he almost thought that body and spirit are entangled, they are one and the same. But Jadabharat, he later on clarified, he gave the example of the dreamer, how the dreamer is not in the dream, but only participating in the dream. There's a distinction between the reality and dream. So it gives an example. And then, suddenly this description begins. What seems like a big elaboration on the nature of material enjoyment. So actually this, and you will see varieties of material enjoyment being described here. Right? In fact, this whole chapter looks like the menu card of material enjoyment, right? What all ways you can enjoy. In fact, you may get some ideas also when you read this chapter. Oh, this type of enjoyment I think I have not tried. So for one who has a lot of material aspirations, so this chapter can even be very inspiring. But actually, if you do a close analysis of this chapter is not this whole allegory of the chapter itself is the forest of material enjoyment, but it is not a description of material enjoyment, it's an analysis of suffering. Right? What we think as enjoyment is actually a covered form of suffering, and that is what is being highlighted in this chapter. So that's why this is a very insightful chapter. And how does this chapter begin? Who are the plunderers in the forest? The senses. So this, it begins with description of the senses, because our Jai Shishrada Vindavan Bihari Bhagavan ki Jai Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki Jai. Because our sojourn in this material, our journey in this material enjoyment begins with the senses. Right? And that's why now whenever we talk of senses, usually we think of the main villain as sense objects, right? They are the one which are always distracting us. But if you actually look at Bhagavatam's perspective, the senses and sense objects are non-different. Think about it. The senses and sense objects are actually non-different. In fact, each one does not exist without the other. Right? Like for example, how do you know that you have a nose? How do you know that you have a nose? Yes, my young friend, would you like to answer? Do you have a nose? Sure? Okay. And is it working? How do you know it's working? So which means, and this happens a lot during the Bhagavatam class, suddenly the guys in the kitchen will put some tadka. And then the smell of that tadka comes in the class and you are wondering, I wonder what is the menu for breakfast today. Right? Or happens more during japa. When we are completely absorbed in the holy name. And suddenly the kitchen reminds us that yes, you have a nose. So which means, only when the sense object comes in front of you, or sense object comes in contact with you. What does coming in contact with you means? Only when the sense objects make their presence felt, you realize the presence of your own senses. Right? So, do you have eyes when you sleep? Yes or no? If you give any answer, I can argue against it. So, right? So, the point is, what use are eyes when you are not using them? Right? So, only when a sense object comes in front of us, that's when the senses get activated. In fact, by nature, the senses are told, are described, even in the Sankhya philosophy, they're described. Senses are those which are always running outwards. Right? Whether you like it or not, the senses are always alert. And that's why I use the word sensors. Suddenly, if an object comes, the camera ting starts flashes. Right? Because by nature, you cannot control your ability to smell, to see, to experience touch. Right? We cannot control them. They are always tuned outwards. Right? Likewise, how do you know a sense object exists? Only when you have senses. Right? Like, do you know the Mahaprasad Laddu which is in Mukundmala Prabhu's pocket right now? We don't know because you cannot sense it. Right? So, only when the senses perceive a sense object, you know the presence of the sense object. So, the sense and sense object, therefore, they both are part of this one common event called as sense perception. So, that is why we never differentiate senses and sense objects. Right? They are part of this one common event. Each one does not exist without another. And to make things even worse, there is a very natural attraction between these two. The senses love to come in contact with the sense objects, and the sense objects love to hit your senses. Right? They are designed that way. And this sparsha, this contact between the sense and sense object, is what is the first principle that Bhagavad Gita talks about. Matra sparshastu kaunteya. Right? So this matra sparsha, this object between, and what does a wise man look at these as? These are all just transient phenomena of this world. This is not the permanent reality. This interaction between senses and sense objects, it is just it is real, but it is transient. Right? Therefore, a wise man does not get bewildered by this change. Right? Dhirastatana muhyati. A wise man does not get bewildered with these transient interactions. But nevertheless, transient they may be, they are very important. Because the whole forest of material enjoyment begins with these five plunderers. Right? So, and because of this, so this brings about a very important instruction. If you look at the broad Vedic texts, there are so many instructions that the Vedic texts present, but you can boil down them to just three basic instructions. The first instruction that you will see is of detachment. Right? When you're talking of detachment at a very basic level, right? An answer which will evolve in the course of today's discussion. But at the basic level, it means detachment between the sense and sense objects. Right? And that's what apparently it seems like. If you just read this chapter on a very superficial level, the conclusion of this chapter would be sense gratification is bad. It is entangling, therefore I have to remain away from sense objects. Right? Literally this is what Arjuna also concluded in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. He thought war is bad, therefore the goal of my life should be, or the process of my life should be, stay away from war. But then Krishna then clarified that, look Arjuna, you may be out of the war, but is the war out of you? right? The sense objects, you may stay away from sense objects, but are the sense objects away from you? Because in your inner space, in your mind, you are still interacting. And this brings us about to the second level of Vedic instruction. The primary level, I said, was that of detachment. The next level the Vedic instructions talk about is a level of dispassion. Right? And we'll try to understand this. And this is a very important theme that this chapter is talking about. The whole description of this forest of material enjoyment, right? It is talking about how we are entering into a forest. If I may even put it in a more, a more threatening way, we are creating this forest of material enjoyment for ourselves. And that brings us to a very important Vedic worldview. And this is something very challenging for most of us who grew up with modern science as our framework. Because modern science has always told us that there is an observable universe. Everything is observable. Everything is tangible. We use all these modern tools to observe the world. Like I observe, I say this, what is this color? Oh, there is a light meter and I see the frequency coming. And then I say, oh, this is yellow or this is golden. This is maroon. We like to observe things and classify things, right? But the Vedic perspective of reality is completely different. It does not talk about a phenomenal, observable universe. It talks about a participatory universe. What do I mean by that word? Is it just a complicated jargon? It says that actually, we are all participating in this field of material energy. And we are constantly increasing this. That's why the word that is used in Vedic literature is called Jagat. What does the word Jagat mean? That which is constantly expanding. Right? Every time consciousness is interacting with material energy, you are expanding this universe for yourself. Now you may say, "Arey, come on, Prabhu. Are you saying that if I close my eyes, the universe will disappear?" There are certain world philosophies that talk about this also. But we are not professing that kind of a philosophy. We are basically saying that how we are constantly partaking in many material interactions and thereby increasing this forest of material enjoyment around us. Right? So, to give you a very, very simple example, which a real world practical example which I experienced just yesterday. I walked into Sinaji Cafe here, Sinaji Bhavan, and suddenly I was confronted with varieties of cupcakes. If you haven't checked it out, please go check it out. Now they have a big variety. Earlier you used to get only one kind of cupcake with different colors, creams of different colors on it. But now the variety has changed. Now there is a brown color cupcake. Then there is a tan color cupcake. Then there is a red color cupcake. Then there is a black and tan combination cupcake. Then there is a tan and black chocolate color cupcake. So they have almost 10 varieties of cupcakes. And suddenly when I saw that, I said, give me one of each. And two of those red ones because they look really good. Right? So now, this is how I saw Sinaji Bhavan. Right? But if a dog were to enter into Sinaji Bhavan, the dog would just see big blobs of one. Because, or a dog or a cat or some animals which have monochromatic vision, they see only one color, black and white, two colors. So the dog will say, there is only one cupcake, 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 cupcake. They all look the same, right? But you and I, our brain, our body, our interaction, our consciousness channelized through this senses and the body and the nervous neurological system. When we look at them, we register this particular interaction called as brown cupcake. Not only that, we add certain value also to it. That brown color cupcake, which is basically chocolate cupcake, is good. The red color cupcake is beetroot cupcake, not good, too healthy, right? So we now associate value or some meaning to the brown color and the red color cupcakes. But is that real? Is brown cupcake good? While all this is happening, Rajams Prabhu will walk into Sinaji Bhavan because he has to arrange some guest prasadam to some guests who have come. He doesn't even notice the cupcakes because he's completely detached. He only notices moong dal and chapati, that's all, right? He doesn't even notice. So in his universe, cupcakes don't even exist, right? And even if he looks at it, cupcake, he is looking at it. But it just doesn't register in his psyche because for him, that is nothing for him, right? So you see how we are both entering into the same place, but our experience of reality is completely different. I live in a universe of cupcakes. He lives in a universe of moong dal and chapati and probably seva for the guests, right? You see? So this is the concept of the participatory universe. And our Vedic scriptures highlight this a lot. Because how does it matter whether this is yellow or brown or gold or whatever color? How this is interacting with me? How my consciousness is perceiving this? Is what is going to define my entanglement with it. Does it make sense now? My study of the universe, the objective reality, is based on my entanglement with it. Because my goal is not to know how yellow this yellow is. My goal is to know how much this thing is going to absorb my consciousness. Right? Because my whole objective here is how do I disentangle myself from the so-called suffering, right? And that's why this whole chapter is presenting an evolution of this, how consciousness evolves into the domain of material enjoyment. So this forest that we're talking, and think about it, this allegory of a forest is very beautiful, very relevant, because if you look at a genuine forest, right? Not those forests that we have in the middle of the cities. Like a really, really genuine forest. Imagine if I put you in the middle, if I just suddenly drop you in the middle of the forest, you will never know where is the beginning, where is the middle, or where is the end of this forest. Right? You will never know which direction is left or which direction is right. It seems like the forest is ever expanding in all directions. And the way the life expands inside a forest, does life expand only in one direction? Does life only expand in vertical direction because trees go vertically? No. There is left, right, up, down. Literally, it expands in all directions. Literally, this is how our forest of material enjoyment expands. So, we are right now stuck in a universe of, in a forest of material enjoyment which is expanding all around us. It is even behind us. It is even below us. It's even in spaces that you cannot even imagine. And that evolution of material enjoyment is what is being described here. What starts with the senses, then expands to our extended senses in the form of our near and dear ones. And it expands even beyond that to our interactions in this world. Like today, this particular verse talks about business interactions. Right? So you see how this forest is expanding constantly. Right? Like many years ago, when this unfortunate Chernobyl incident happened in Russia, many people, not many, everybody actually had to evacuate that place. So for almost like 25-30 years, human beings never stepped their foot there. Then suddenly after 30 years, people were curious to know. So the scientists from all over the world, they went there. And guess what happened? Nature restored because it expanded. It expanded in all directions, not just in one line or one direction. It expanded. That's the nature of this material energy. It expands in all directions. And that's the nature of material enjoyment also. It expands. It doesn't stop. And that's why when you think, I will enjoy only this much. As a famous chips ad, their line goes, no one can eat just one. Right? So likewise, no one can have just one little material enjoyment. Because the nature of material enjoyment is like that. It expands. It goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And that evolution of material enjoyment is what is being described in this specific chapter. Right? So, but then you may say, is it only limited to the senses and sense objects? Where is the perception happening? In the mind. So now mind is the next level that we need to understand. So mind, what begins from the senses and the sense objects and their interaction, but finally that object becomes dear to us. It literally enters into us when it enters into the mental space. Right? Because mind, as we discussed in one of our previous classes also, mind is the tool that the senses uses to look at this world. Just like how we use the glasses, like I use my glasses to look at the world, but the glasses are not the real seer. The seer is the eye which is behind the glasses. Likewise, the senses are not the real things which are interacting. It's the mind. Senses are just giving a signal. But it is the mind which is the central repository of all these senses, which is creating. So when I look at the cupcake has entered into me because the mind, it is described, the mind literally takes a shape of the sense objects and shows that image to the soul. Right? Imagine you are in a closed room. No walls, no windows, no holes to peep outside. Right? All that exists in front of you is one big clay dough, malleable clay dough. But the property of that clay dough is very special. Whatever is outside, that clay dough takes that shape. Right? So imagine if there is a cupcake outside that room, that clay dough transforms into a cupcake. And then you see that cupcake. But it's not ordinary Play-Doh. This clay can take the color of the cupcake, the shape of that cupcake, the texture of the cupcake, the smell of that cupcake, even the taste of that cupcake. Welcome to the mind. This is how the mind works. So the mind is that inner space, that material energy, which transforms according to the nature of the sense objects. So actually what we are interacting with constantly are the shapes and forms which the mind is projecting towards the soul. Right? So therefore, but you may then say, but Prabhu, I am observing so many things, but why my mind is not registering everything? Right? Like for example, I am trying to memorize this shloka from 1 week, but I am not able to memorize this shloka. But yesterday randomly while going to Manor in an auto, I heard one filmy song and that song I memorized already. Right? Why is it that I am not able to remember things which I want to and I can't forget the things that I want to? Right? So why is this happening? So this is then described that. And if you actually look at all the descriptions that are there of in this forest of enjoyment, all these so-called enjoyments have some emotional value associated with it. Right? And now think about it. Going back to my previous example, because I ascribed some emotional value with the cupcake, as soon as I saw that cupcake, I became triggered. And for Rajams Prabhu, it has no emotional value. Therefore, he didn't even notice it. Right? So what are these emotions? Emotions are like the glue that sticks experiences to our memory. Emotions are the glue that sticks experiences to our memory. So when there is a strong emotion you experience, immediately that thing gets registered. In fact, you may not even realize this. Let's say as you are walking out from the class, suddenly you notice, let's say, a snake crawl by. And in that moment, a fraction of a moment, especially if you are new to GEV, we are used to seeing all the water snakes that are there in here. And they are water snakes, don't worry. You are safe here. Right? But for city dwellers, any kind of snake is dangerous. So in that fraction of a moment, you know what happens? An emotional spike comes. Now you may say innocently, that one gasp, that one moment, you thought, oh, it's okay. And then you become, no, the snake anyway crawled away. Or maybe the person next to you says, don't worry, Prabhu, this is not a poisonous snake. It's only a water snake. Or maybe it's a rat snake, farmer-friendly snake. Right? So that is how I told many guests in the past and tried to pacify them. So in that moment, you may get pacified. But you created something for yourself. Something indelible. Something unerasable in your inner space. You know what you did? That snake has now registered in your inner space. You know what is the proof of that? Tonight you will all have a dream of being in a class, but the speaker is not a human being, but the speaker looks like a cupcake. And while you are trying to relish that class, you are surrounded by snakes. This is how our inner space works. It creates a khichdi of all of that, right? And creates some reality for you, right? So we don't realize how much we are feeding our mind unconsciously. Every time you are emotionally involved with anything in this world, you are creating an impression. These are what we call as samskaras. Right? And this is what will dominantly remain with you. You may think, oh, snake, yeah, I forgot. But subtly in your inner space, you created a scar. These are called samskaras. Right? So we have scarred our inner space. I am using the word scar because both pleasure and joy is a scar. Material pleasure and material pain, both are scars in our inner space because both are disrupting the consciousness. Right? So the idea is that the more we get involved with this pleasure, the more we are scarring ourselves. Therefore, the second level of instruction which the Vedas give is become dispassionate. Sukhe, dukhe, same, kritva, labha, labhau, jaya, jayo. Oh, happiness? Okay. Distress? Okay. Success? Okay. Failure? Okay. So you don't allow yourself to get triggered by these fluctuations in material energy around you. And because the nature of the world is that, there are constant fluctuations. Suddenly it will become dark and start raining. And suddenly it will become bright and the sun will come out. So this light and dark that we go through, right, this is something that we should not get too overwhelmed by them. And that is what this emotional dispassion means, right? But then, it doesn't stop there. If you stop here, then you are at best a jnani or a vairagi. That's their approach, right? But now, Bhagavatam takes us to the deepest level of how to deal with this forest of material enjoyment. Right? For that, we have to understand the principle of pleasure. right? Where, so let, here I'll ask you this question. When you eat the cupcake, which I'm sure you will do after this class, who is enjoying the cupcake? Is it, I mean, the question, the options you have is it your eyes which are enjoying the cupcake? Is it the tongue which is enjoying the cupcake? Is it the mind which is enjoying the cupcake? Or is it you, the soul, which is enjoying the cupcake? Four or none of the above also, maybe. Nota. So what do you think? How many of you say it is your eyes which are enjoying the cupcake? Raise your hand if you say eyes are enjoying the cupcake. The real enjoyer is the eyes, nobody else. Okay? No votes for option A. Okay. If you say the tongue is the only enjoyer, because the taste, cupcake means the flavor. So the tongue is the only enjoyer of cupcake. How many of you say the tongue which is the enjoyer? Okay, good. Few votes for the tongue. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. How many of you say the mind which is the enjoyer? Okay, good. Alright. So, here is a question to all of you. Are your eyes sentient? No. Is your tongue sentient? No. Is your mind sentient? Sentient means, does it have awareness? Right? Does eyes and tongue, we know, is matter. Mind is quasi-matter, but still it is still matter. Is the mind sentient? No. Who is the only sentient entity in the whole interaction? The soul. So who is enjoying? Or who is supposedly enjoying? Or who is thinking is enjoying? The soul. Then now we dug ourselves a deeper ditch now. What is cupcake? Matter or spirit? Matter. Can matter give enjoyment to the soul? No. Then what are we getting wrong here? What is giving pleasure to the soul? Connection between the mind and the soul. But there has to be some principle of pleasure involved in it, right? Okay, I'll give you another example. If you eat a plastic cupcake, do you get pleasure? Right? So clearly, food has some pleasure in it. Yes or no? Anybody who denies it is lying. Right? So clearly, there is a pleasure principle in food. So what is it in the food which is giving you pleasure? Is there pleasure in material sense gratification? If anybody is saying no, then they are denying. You are falsely denying the principle of, is there pleasure in this material world? Yes. The problem is not the pleasure. The problem is the way we are perceiving pleasure. Any food that we eat, right? So one thing that food does is, it nourishes the body. So there is a physical component of food which is nourishing your body. Does food also create some mental satisfaction? Yes, because that food also has a mental component. For example, if that food is made in a sattva, it gives a sattvic enjoyment. If it is made in rajas, it gives a rajas. It has a component with it. It has a. If somebody is cooking that food in a very angry, grudging mood, that gets transferred into that food and you also experience that anger and grudge. Right? So there is a mental component also involved with that food. But, did you ever notice that all forms of life require food for all forms of life to sustain. Whether you look at a big gigantic elephant or you look at a tiny little amoeba, the principle of life is they all require food to sustain. In fact, the template of life, the archetype of life, is created on the basis that they require life, they require food to sustain. This, that which is nourishing life, is the Supreme Lord. Within that food, there is Krishna. So when you are eating food, that so-called pleasure principle that we are interacting with is Krishna. To be even more precise, it is Srimati Radharani, Krishna's pleasure principle. The problem that comes is, we don't see Krishna and Radha there. What do we instead see? And this is the principle which in the Chatushloki Bhagavatam described, that whatever appears to be of any artha, of any value, if it is without relationship to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy. Right? That reflection which appears to be in darkness, it is an abhas. It is not artha, it is an abhas. Abhas means like a reflection which has semblance of reality, but it is not real. Right? So when the scriptures say that this whole forest of material enjoyment is an illusion, what they refer to, it is an abhas. It has semblance of reality because there is Krishna in material enjoyment. You cannot deny it. There is pleasure in all of them. But that pleasure can liberate you when you see Krishna's connection in it. But that pleasure can incriminate you further when you see it as an abhas, when you disconnect it from Krishna, when you see it as the illusory potency of Krishna. Right? So that bhoga vancha which the jiva does, it comes because Krishna bhuliya jiva. The moment there is forgetfulness of the connection with Krishna, that is when it turns into a forest of material enjoyment. And that's what yesterday Maharaj also very eloquently he said, that Vrindavan also is a forest. But it is a forest of spiritual enjoyment. He used that expression yesterday. So the idea is, we are not here to condemn the forest. We are here to reframe our interaction with the forest of this material energy, of the so-called Krishna's energy. Right? And that is where this verse is specifically talking about the concept of money. There are many dimensions of this material energy, but money is a very, very important aspect of material energy. Because, as I mentioned earlier, nature of material energy is how it expands. One of the powerful ways you can expand anything in this material world is through money. Right? Therefore, we also need money to expand. Right? So that money, therefore, is not just currency. Money in the Vedic context is artha. Right? Artha means not coins. Artha means what? Anything that is of some intrinsic value is called artha. Right? So what is of value is Krishna's energy. And that's why in the Vedic culture, money is not condemned. She is seen as Lakshmi Devi. Right? She is Krishna's energy potency. That potency which can help you to create, help you to expand, right? Helps you to grow. So in fact, if you see, everything that is condemned in this chapter has a divine version in the Vedic context. Right? Home is home, and family and spouse and all of these have been condemned. In the Vedic culture, we have the concept of Griha Lakshmi. ధాన్య లక్ష్మి, ఐశ్వర్య లక్ష్మి, రైట్? ఈవెన్ ఆనిమల్స్ ఆర్ ఆల్సో సీన్, పెట్స్ ఆర్ ఆల్సో సీన్ గజలక్ష్మి. సో లక్ష్మి హ్యాస్ మల్టిపుల్ డైమెన్షన్స్ ఇండికేటింగ్ దాట్ దేర్ ఆర్ మల్టిపుల్ వేస్ ఇన్ విచ్ యూ కెన్ క్రియేట్ దట్ ప్రాస్పెరిటీ ఇఫ్ యూ లెర్న్ టు సీ అర్థ యాజ్ లక్ష్మి అండ్ నాట్ జస్ట్ యాజ్ సంథింగ్ ఫర్ అవర్ ఓన్ ఎంజాయ్మెంట్. సో లిటరలీ ఈవెన్ గోల్డ్ ఇన్ వన్ ఆఫ్ ద ప్రీవియస్ వర్సెస్, రైట్, గోల్డ్ ఆల్సో ఈజ్ దట్ ధనలక్ష్మి, లైక్ దట్. సో వాట్ ఈజ్ ఇట్ విచ్ ఇస్ ట్రాన్స్ఫార్మింగ్ లక్ష్మి ఇంటూ, ఇన్ దిస్ వర్స్ ఇట్ టాక్స్ అబౌట్ దిస్ త్రీ కైండ్స్ ఆఫ్ క్లేశాస్. సో హూ ఇస్ హోల్డింగ్ దిస్ త్రీ క్లేశాస్ ఇన్ హర్ హ్యాండ్ అండ్ కాన్స్టెంట్లీ రిమైండింగ్ అస్ ఆఫ్ అవర్ పొజిషన్ దిస్ మెటీరియల్ వరల్డ్? దుర్గా. సో వాట్ ట్రాన్స్ఫార్మ్స్ లక్ష్మి ఇంటూ దుర్గా, ద డివైన్ ఎనర్జీ ఇంటూ దిస్ మహామాయ, ద మెటీరియల్ ఎనర్జీ? ఇట్ ఈస్ అవర్ ఫాల్స్ ఈగో. So when we spoke about false ego here means the false identity that we carry. The nature of the whole seed, that which is causing this whole forest of material enjoyment to grow, is our false ego. The false identity that I am the enjoyer, I am the controller of this material world. That's why yesterday also, if you remember, Maharaj pointed this out, how, what is the speciality of money? Why money has been, you know, he spoke about Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, Sribhir. But why Aishwarya? Why money is so much condemned? Because money very easily creates, it bolsters, it cements your false identity as being the enjoyer, the controller, like that. So the whole idea is that even if you know that false ego is the cause of all the problem, it is not going to help. You know why? Because the false ego, by nature being subtler than the intelligence, it bewilders you. Knowing is still a function of the intelligence. So merely knowing that this world is a forest of material enjoyment is not going to save you. So that is why when you approach this chapter, you have to peel off few more layers. You have to first peel off this layer of detachment. You have to peel off this layer of dispassion and then come to the deepest layer, which is what this chapter is talking about, which is the third level of instruction which the Vedas talk about. Beyond detachment and dispassion is the instruction of devotion. This is the deepest level of instructions, the Rajaguhya, the topmost secret of all the Vedic instructions, which is the level of devotion. What does that say? That the only thing that can help you counteract the false ego is your Shraddha, is your conviction. Right? Just think about it. What does Shraddha mean? What we are convinced about, what we are, what we believe in, and we believe in what we are. Right? If you think, I am the enjoyer of cupcakes, the cupcakes will look fantastic. If you think you have nothing to do with cupcakes, then you will not even notice the cupcakes. So, where is our Shraddha? Where is our level of conviction? That's what shapes us. So, what Bhagavatam is trying to do is, it is reshaping our reality by changing our source of conviction from the senses, the mind, to the lotus, to the dust of the lotus feet of the Mahatmas. That was what has been also spoken of. When the key instruction which Jadabharat gave Maharaj Rahugana is, you know, Mahiyasham Pada Rajobhishekam, take shelter at the dust of the lotus feet of this great stalwart devotees, Mahatmas, because what do these Mahatmas, they emphasize? What do they give us? They reshape our worldview. They reshape our whole perspective of reality from being the enjoyer to being the servant. Right? From a entangling participation to a participation in servitude. Participate we must. But in what mood is what we learn from the Mahatmas, right? So that is why this chapter basically is a beautiful emphasis on not the material enjoyment and not the dangers of material enjoyment, how the material world is bad. These are all secondary. All these are just a platform that Shukadeva Goswami is using to bring us to the point of taking that Mahat Sangha, the association of the great souls, right? And this is the Bhagavatam's worldview that we need to understand. And therefore, we are not in the international society for anti-Maya consciousness. Right? We are in the international society for Krishna consciousness. So, even by condemning material energy, we are only reminding ourselves of the glories of material energy. Right? But rather, we have to glorify Krishna, absorb our mind in Krishna, which we cannot do by our own strength, and therefore we absorb our mind in taking shelter of the instructions of the great souls like Sukadeva Goswami, like Jadabharat, right? So that is the uniqueness of this chapter. As I mentioned in one of my previous classes also here, the story of Jadabharat is popular across many traditions, but each tradition bring out their own flavor to it. The Ashtanga yogis like to showcase Jadabharat as that fallen yogi who has now by the power of his yoga revived all his advanced state of samadhi, and therefore he can take his senses inwards, he can involute his senses and disconnect from this outside world. The jnanis like to quote the story of Jadabharat, showcasing how, look, all this Brahma Jnan that he's teaching, talking about that one fundamental underlying essence of reality, that Brahman. They like to quote Jadabharat's story. Look, he's teaching the Brahma Jnan to our Rahugana. But Vyasa quotes this story in Bhagavatam just to showcase, look, Jadabharat is asking Rahugana to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Mahis, the great Mahatmas. So that is the important lesson that we need to understand from this chapter. Like that. And there are more beautiful descriptions from this allegory that will come up, and future speakers will highlight that. Thank you all so much. These are a few thoughts which I wanted to share. Are there any quick questions or comments before we break? Okay, there's a question.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for bringing such wonderful points. It's a comment and also a question, because you mentioned the same story seen by the different people based on their understanding. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Jiva, Prakriti and Ishwar, all three have the Sachit Ananda aspect. So the perverted happiness in this world is also Ladini, but it is perverted. Then I was just thinking how, because Ishwara's Ladini is there, Srimati Radharani, and Prakriti is the perverted material happiness. But the Jiva's Ladini is that he just come and stop at the point of I am just a soul or Atma. And there is some pleasure in that. So he's just getting attached to a small part of Ladini of a Lord, and he couldn't relish the pastimes of the Lord or connect to the superior Ladini. So there they get stuck. So is it like that's how the people get caught into the different, just learning the Brahman aspect only, that I am the part of that absolute, but I am only that absolute, or don't want to surrender to that absolute and get connected to the supreme Ladini to derive that greatest pleasure. Mm. Is it like that?
Yeah, so when Krishna gives a description of this, Krishna also talks about the tree of material enjoyment, the Urdhva Moolam Adhashakam, right? So when he's describing that tree, and we many times we hear this example that how what is the topmost in the spiritual world is the bottommost in the material world because of the nature of the reflection, right? But think about it, if in the reflection, if the topmost is the bottommost, then what is the bottommost of the object has to be the topmost in the reflection, right? So what is the topmost thing, or what is the bottommost thing in the spiritual world? What is the most insignificant thing in spiritual world? Little more. Think. What is one thing that is so common in spiritual world that people see it as some insignificant thing. Sense gratification, as in that selfish anger, doesn't even exist in spiritual world. What is that one thing which is common to everything in spiritual reality? Sat. Because on the foundation of Sat, there is Chit, and on that there is Ananda. Sat means that eternality, permanence. That is the highest aspiration when a Brahmavadi, a Brahmagyani is trying to aspire for that Brahman. What is Brahman? Brahman is Sat. Right? So what is the foundation of that of the spiritual reality is the highest aspiration that one can have if you look at it from the worldly perspective. But we don't want to limit to that also. That is the most insignificant thing. Right? Like that example that is quoted in, I think the Taittiriya Upanishad, this example comes at how the highest enjoyment, whatever you can get in this world, 100 times that is what a monarch experiences. 100 times what a monarch experiences in this earthly dimension is what a Gandharva experiences. 100 times what a Gandharva experiences, an ordinary Devata experiences. 100 times what an ordinary Devata experiences, Indra experiences. 100 times what Indra experiences, Brihaspati experiences. 100 times what Brihaspati experiences, even an ordinary living entity in the Jana Maha Satya Lokas experience. 100 times what those rishis experience, Brahmaji experiences. 100 times what Brahmaji experiences is what Brahman, Brahmananda is. And then Bhagavatam goes one step further. That Brahmananda is water contained the hoof print of a calf compared to the ocean of Bhakti Rasa. Right? And that is what we can experience. So yes, so that Brahmananda is actually also a limitation. So that is from our perspective, it may seem like it is very, very advanced thing, and that is also real. There is extraordinarily high level of pleasure in it. But within that foundation is where the Bhakti Rasa, that's like the most insignificant thing. So this is completely insignificant compared to the joy of the Ananda that we talk about. And Ananda can only come through rasa exchange, not otherwise. Did I address it? Yeah? Okay. All right. So thank you all so much. Rantra Shivad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Anantakoti Vaishnavanda ki jai.